Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, film editor for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Jeffrey K. Howard of VegasFilmCritic.com. And into film
yes. On KCLV Channel KCLV, 2 on the City go. Channel. Yeah.
Awesome.
And thank you can also thank you very much. And
what else you got? Please.
I forgot. Okay. All right. Fair anyway. What are we doing here? I forget.
I think we're talking about movies.
I think I saw one or two.
Yeah.
Week.
So well the big thing to talk about this week that we can start out with is the seventh movie in the Harry Potter series, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Part one.
What's wrong?
Wrong? Nothing's wrong. According to you, anyway.
But if you've got something to say, don't be shy. Spit it out.
All right, I'll spit it out. But don't expect me to be grateful just because now there's another damn thing we've got to find.
I thought you knew what you signed up for.
Yeah, I thought I did too.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't quite understand. What part of this isn't living up to your expectations? Did you think we were going to be staying in a 5-star hotel, finding a Horcrux every other day? You thought you'd be back with your mum by Christmas?
I just thought, after all this time, we would have actually achieved something. I thought you knew what you were doing. I thought Dumbledore would have told you something worthwhile. I thought you had a plan.
I told you everything Dumbledore told me. And in case you haven't noticed, we have found a Horcrux already.
Yeah, and we're about as close to getting rid of it as we are to finding the rest of them, aren't we?
Please. Take the Horcrux. You wouldn't be saying any of this if you hadn't been wearing it all day.
I don't know why I listen to that radio every night, dear. To make sure I don't hear Ginny's name. Or Fred. Or George. Or Mum.
What, you think I'm not listening too? You think I don't know how this feels?
No, you don't know how it feels! Your parents are dead! You have no family!
Stop!
Finally, go! Go then!
Greedy exactly. Warner Brothers.
Right, because there's going to be part two that's coming in July.
Yes, and yes. Now rumor has it J.K. Rowling's writing another book, and there could be another film.
Oh,
of course,
God.
You know.
It's never going to end. It's too bad because
why not? I mean, come on. We can't let it completely end. But I still think it'll make a great TV series because there's so much to do with little kids as Harry Potter. You can go back.
To start at the beginning.
Oh, you can recast it, you know, because a whole year has gone by. You know, every year at Hogwarts, you can do so much with it. I just think it would be great as a TV show.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like I enjoy these movies, but I feel like I'm glad that the story ends. I feel like too many of these franchises and things the creators are desperate to just keep things going forever, and I like it when stories come to a conclusion.
It's because they haven't found the next franchise. That's why.
Right, but
there's nothing replaced Harry Potter yet. I mean, Percy Jackson didn't work. Lemony Snicket didn't work. There were so many out there. They thought the heir apparent to Harry Potter.
Right.
Find the next big thing, and not only did they fail miserably.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so
all
they're
those
gonna
movies are huge fans.
And as long as people keep going to Harry Potter, I mean, why not? There's just new kids coming along, you know,
well,
new
right.
generations.
I understand the business motivation for it, but I think from like a storytelling standpoint, that from a creative standpoint, I would rather see a story have a nice, satisfying conclusion and be able to move on to a new story.
Well, I think this run will do that with Deathly Hallows.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think Rowling's going to do something. If she does do another book,
right,
it'll be something different.
Well, that would be good. So. I would love her to create something new because she's obviously got a great imagination and to see something new come out of this, but not like Harry Potter Jr. or something.
No.
We don't want to see that.
No Superman ripoffs.
Exactly.
But yeah, the seventh film. Unbelievable.
It's a huge series, yeah.
Yeah, and finally, it's funny when someone was asking me to describe the story in this film, there really isn't much to describe story-wise. It's more really in-depth character development again.
Which I liked about it.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, this time there was very little action. It was just a lot of characters mulling around, looking at each other, trying to figure out how to save the world, how to save each other.
Right.
And it was just, it's basically the same thing. Voldemort's back. He's trying to kill Harry Potter. Everyone's getting organized now.
Right.
And it's like, it's building up to a big showdown.
Yeah.
Not that they didn't have showdowns in the last two or three films. But this time it seems like it's a curtain call. Everybody's ready to take the stage.
A huge amount of characters.
Exactly.
But I like that about it, that it starts out and you've got all of these supporting characters and this big sort of action set piece going on. And I was thinking at the beginning, like, there are so many characters. This movie is just going to be ridiculously crowded and hard to follow. And then really that all kind of like fades into the background for most of the middle of the movie. And you just have the three main characters and they're kind of regrouping and figuring out, what do we do? And they really do a good job, I think, of selling that sort of despair and panic of like the world is ending and we don't know how to stop it.
Right.
And they have to figure it out. And I liked that about it, that it was just them And they're
literally them against the world.
Right.
You know, because the Ministry of Magic has been taken over by Voldemort. All his cronies are in there. Total fascist themes in this movie. I mean, and not there weren't before in some of the Harry Potter films, but this is just absolutely fascist.
Got some sort of ethnic cleansing going on.
Oh, whole Nazi kind of references. Yeah. I mean, even Lovegood, did you see that she even had...
She gets a tattoo on
tattoo,
her arm.
I mean, the whole Holocaust thing. Yes. I mean, and it was in the people, the little stormtroopers that worked the Ministry of Magic were in the gray outfits and the hats. And I'm like, I thought that was a little too close for comfort in this. I mean, she was trying to make a point with that. You
I don't know.
So,
I mean, I didn't think it was too heavy-handed. I mean, I felt like it was something that you could get if you got it, but it might not necessarily...
It was obvious.
Yeah, it's obvious to you and me, but to kids who are just into the story and the magic and the Harry Potter-ness of it, they might not see it. I didn't think it was too, you know, hitting you over the head with that.
Right. And not only that, people die in this. Characters are dying left and right.
Definitely.
We won't say who, but if you've read the book, you know, I guess you know what's going on. But
relatively
that was
much.
I haven't read I've only read one book out of the whole series.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same place, actually.
I read Prisoner of Azkaban because I saw the trailer that summer, like a couple of months before it came out.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with knowing what is going on. I went frame by frame on Apple trailers. So I went and I read the book, and I'm telling you, it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life.
Yeah, but it wasn't motivated. You didn't motivate you to read more of the book?
Because then I saw the movie, which I loved. But I love all of them. But, I mean, it just robbed me of so much that I wanted to see in the book. So I was so disappointed with the movie in terms of its translation from the book. I thought, I'm not going to read any more books. I'm going to see all the movies first, then I'm going to go back. Because it's going to give me so much more depth, so much more detail.
Right. There's obviously a lot more.
And it will not compare to the movie whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting now to see the final installment of Deathly Hallow, and then I'll have all the books, and I'm ready to sit down and read them all. But I'm telling you, reading Azkaban, I would stop every few pages and just like look at the wall and go, this woman is amazing. I mean, how she is just magical. The way she describes things, the detail. I mean, I can see how it's become just a worldwide phenomenon, getting kids to read, because it just, and adults as well. You know, it's just absolutely phenomenal. The only thing about the new film that I thought was a little too tedious is that we had a lot of these camping scenes, as I call them. You know,
They're in the forest and they've got a tent, and this is while they're trying to figure
Harry's
out.
Harry's got a trace on him, and so every time he disappears, you know, Voldemort and his cronies are looking for him, so they have to put up these special kind of shields and enchantments so they can be protected. But they always end up being in the middle of nowhere, the most desolate place. It looks like Antarctica half the time.
Right.
And I just thought that got a little tedious, because then I thought, great, we're in the tent again with these two.
Right.
And But I just thought it. I understand the purpose of it, but I just thought it did it one too many times.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can see how you might find that a little tedious. But again, I thought that was probably the strongest part of the movie. That was where they really strip away all of the special effects and all of the extra characters and just get. I mean, these three kids who knows, they were cast when they were 10 years old. Have turned into really good actors, all three of them.
They absolutely have.
And they really play that dynamic among the three characters really, really well.
Yeah.
And so I like that. I mean, I thought that the desolate setting really gave you a good symbolic
because
sense.
All the emotions that have been building up over the past six movies, they're finally bubbling out.
Right.
People are accusing people of each other and they're pointing fingers.
Right.
Tempers are flying.
Yeah.
Finding, you know, all the details about his parents' death and leading back. Yeah, there's some really great revelations in the movie.
I thought it was very effective. And I think one of the things is interesting, because I was sort of frustrated with the previous two movies that felt like they were a lot of kind of marking time before we get to the big finale. And I thought, okay, here now we're going to really, the plot's going to move forward. And it does move forward. But I found myself more interested by those small moments than I was in the big plot moving forward, which was something that I felt like was missing from the previous movies. So I think when it all comes down to it, the character interactions are as important or more important than all of the plot stuff that's going on in this movie with the horcruxes that they have to find and the little MacGuffins that they have to get to in order to stop
Voldemort.
When
you said there was, what, four left? Or
something,
you know, something
like that.
I thought, wow, the movie's been on 2 hours. we're going to go longer trying to find these things? And we took a whole movie trying to find one and not to destroy it? And,
I mean, stuff like that. There are definitely points in the movie where they explain what the plot is about, and I was just like, I don't even know what they're talking about, and I don't even care.
Right.
You know, you get the basic sense of Voldemort is out there, Harry's in danger, they got to do something. As far as the nitty-gritty details, that was kind of beside the point.
But they were front and center, all three of them, for a majority of the film. It was not about just about anybody else.
No,
you had the
really
beginning
not.
Set up, you had a casting call with a lot of the characters, and then somewhere in the middle and towards the end, but a majority of the time it was those three trying to figure things out, and I thought that was very different from any of the other films.
Right, so, and I like that. Again,
I did
think
too.
They do a good job with it, and I'm sure when we get to the next movie, all of those characters who had small roles, or there's some big supporting characters who aren't even in this movie.
Right.
Maggie Smith, for example, who's the headmaster of Hogwarts, who's been all the other ones.
We didn't even go to Hogwarts.
Right.
I think we saw one shot of it at one time, the castle.
Yeah, you see the train that's
going
towards
and then one of his cronies stopped the train or something like that, and he's not here, you know, looking for Harry. But I thought, wow, well, this is the first Harry Potter. We're not even at Hogwarts.
Right, they've really moved beyond that kind of stuff. But I think it's a lot of that is probably, I mean, I haven't read the book, but I imagine a lot of that is going to come back in the next movie, and we're going to get all the big, exciting climax stuff that you want. But before that, I was glad that they spent the time with the characters to really
kind of their
delve
last
into
hurrah.
Their psychology.
Yeah, good for them.
So it's a good movie.
Hopefully kids will like it. It was a little strong, a little scary at the beginning when the snake's eating that lady and they murdered her. And
right.
But wow,
it's
if they
intense.
Show...
It is intense.
Yeah, if they show, you know, the snake eating this woman, I'm like, wow. I mean, that's in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
But well, it didn't. It did a little tease.
It's a PG-13 movie, and I think the fan base is so diverse right now. It's far more than just kids.
Oh, it is.
And
it is.
I think the fans are...
I think the kids who were little kids when it started are now much older.
It was 9 years ago that that first movie came out.
So now they're 20 years old.
Right, exactly.
Just like they are.
And I think fans will be happy with this. And
I do too.
And I was happy with it too.
I actually want to see it again.
Yeah.
There's a lot that went by
that
I have to see it one more time. But I actually want to see it. The last film, though, I wasn't too thrilled with. I tried to watch
the previous
it again.
One?
Just kind of bored me.
I don't know. See, I felt like, again, those fifth and sixth ones, there was a lot of kind of marking time, but they still did some good character stuff that you felt like you really knew the characters by the time we now get to this big showdown. So
go see it.
Yeah, definitely.
How could
go
you
see
not?
It.
Right. Yeah,
well, I mean, if you haven't seen any of them, maybe start at the beginning.
That's
but,
crazy. I think everyone's seen at least one or two of them. So.
Yeah, probably. So.
But I was very, very pleasantly happy with it.
Yeah. So also on a completely different note, also opening this week is a very serious sort of, I guess you could argue that this is trying for Oscar consideration is the drama Fair Game.
Valerie.
What? Wilson never worked for the CIA, but his wife...
is an agency operative on weapons of mass destruction. He just went ahead and did it.
Does this run overseas?
It's in the newspaper, Valerie. It's on the...
No, Novak's column. Is he syndicated
it's
overseas?
It's everywhere.
Political thriller.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a sort of a thriller.
Short on thriller. thrills.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that this movie tries to craft a thriller out of a story that's kind of mundane in a lot of ways. It's based on
tremendously mundane.
Obviously, Jeff did not like this movie.
Well, it's not that I didn't like it. I remember as it all unfolded in real life in Valerie Plame, she was a CIA agent who was outed by the Bush administration, and the whole deal was how much did the president know? Was he involved? Karl Rove, Scooter Libby. There was a whole cast of characters from the White House. And she was – what I didn't understand fully after seeing the movie is just how much danger she was really in.
Right.
And how much she was integrated into Middle Eastern policy, how covert she was, how this beautiful blonde woman who had all these different covers who could go in there and literally be a female James Bond. And I was very impressed with that. And that's what the movie kind of – you know, I love political movies. It was like an All the President's Men kind of film.
Right.
You know, but it's the intricacies and the details of the political system and of those – and if you're not interested in those kind of things – I can just see – do you see people walking out? Because the movie kind of got a little bloated and a little – took itself so seriously because it was like she was – it showed what the aftermath of what happened to their personal lives after they were outed. And I just think people didn't care, you know, watching it because I think – that if you're in that system, if you understand what was going on, yeah, it was a big deal. But I think to a movie and for the movie-going audience, they just didn't give two shakes. And I even saw that, too, because I think it just dragged on way too long.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I mean, I on the one hand, I kind of agree with what you're saying. But on the other hand, I felt like, I mean, it is almost like two movies. Like the first half is about her as a secret agent, and you see her going to
all
these
different
locales. She's
a Jason Bourne kind of character,
yeah. And it's exciting, and they're trying to figure out, are there weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and they're all around the globe and everything. And then sort of the second half of the movie, or maybe not even quite half, maybe like the last third of the movie after she's outed is about this fallout. And
how it affects her and her husband.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of that I felt like was there's a lot of speechifying, especially from Sean Penn as her husband when he gets all righteously angry. And that was a little much. Like the movie.
But it was almost every scene they did that. Yeah. Every time he had to reaffirm his position to her, to Fox News, to wherever he was, saying the truth is going to set you free kind of attitude. And it just went on and on and on. And there was no, the resolution at the end was just kind of like.
Right. Well, but I mean, the thing is that in real life, there was no nice, tidy resolution to this. I mean, if this was a fiction film, we would have gotten a more conclusive ending. And obviously, you can't get that out of real life. But and you're right. He is he is making the same points kind of loudly over and over again.
Right.
But I thought the way that it explored the sort of strain on their marriage, and especially given that this is based on the books by the real people
right.
and they're involved in the production, I was impressed that they allowed to themselves to be portrayed this way, that he comes off as like, yes, of course, he's right. But at the same time, he's very self-aggrandizing and self-promoting, and maybe he didn't go about this in the right way. And I like that it allowed room for that, and it showed the strain that it put on their personal lives. And even though it's a very different kind of story than the story of the first part of the movie, which is about her going around the world and, you know, being on all these secret missions, I still found that part interesting, too, just in a different way.
I just don't think it has it's marketable. I just don't think it's got an audience.
Right.
I think it would have made a better TV movie. Definitely an HBO movie.
Yeah.
Definitely an HBO movie. I just don't see